This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
New York is the city that never sleeps, and neither does Sal Licata. From Flushing in the Bronx to the Meadowlands and MSG, Sal sounds off on the biggest sports news of the day. Welcome to WFAN Daily with Sal Licata.
Welcome to a special edition, a bonus edition of WFAN Daily. It is a pleasure to be joined by John Hurwitz, who, of course, has risen to fame here with the creation of Cobra Kai, a co-creator. It has been a tremendous series for years. But the reason why really I wanted to have John on, not only to talk about Cobra Kai, because he's a die-hard New York Mets fan. So we want to get his thoughts ahead of spring training. John, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today. How are things?
Things are great. I'm happy to be here.
All right. So tell me a little bit about Cobra Kai first. Before you get to give us your Mets thoughts and all that stuff, I want to hear about how you came up with the idea. I love the show. Actually, I just binged the final season and final episode over the course of the weekend, but I was really into the show from the beginning, all the nostalgia of it. That's right in my wheelhouse. How did you come up with the brilliant idea? I know you're a co-creator on this project. Take me through that thought process.
So this is something that we've been talking about for a long time. My partners are Hayden Schlossberg, who I've been friends with since high school, and Josh Heald, who I've been friends with since college. So we've all known each other since we were teenagers. We all grew up on the same entertainment. We all loved the Karate Kid movies. At first it started off, the inspirational sports story, the underdog story of Daniel LaRusso. But as we got older and got more into comedy, we thought there was something ridiculous about there being this, teenage karate gang that's terrorizing a high school. We became obsessed with William Zabka and just the idea of the Cobra Kais. So when, we were young screenwriters in Hollywood, we were in our 20s, and we were, at this time, I was writing Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle with Hayden, and Josh was, thinking of movies like Hot Tub Time Machine. But we always had Karate Kid in our hearts and loved the idea of, at the time we talked about it as a movie. We're like, maybe we could do this movie called Cobra Kai, which would examine what happens to the bully from your high school. But Johnny Lawrence was the bully in everyone's high school. We all knew Johnny Lawrence. So that's where it really started. And then fast forward a bunch of years later, we see Netflix doing shows like Fuller House, and we see Stranger Things with like the 80s nostalgia. We're like, hey, that idea that we had all those years ago, maybe that's a realistic thing that we could do. And, we put it together, and the rest is history.
Was it difficult to, now you had some success, as you mentioned before, it's not like you're coming from nowhere and here's a screenplay and boom, here we go. So you did have some success, you were no name. Was it difficult to get that approved, or was that a thing right away, boom, people loved the idea?
It was a process. I mean, the good news was the people were loving the idea. So like the process was, we found out who has the rights to Karate Kid. And at the time it was Will Smith's company was kind of like guarding the gates of it because they had made the movie with Jaden Smith. So we ended up basically having a meeting over there. They loved it. We met with Sony, who controls it beyond them. They loved it. And they were like, okay, well, go get the guys. Well, we knew William Zabka a little bit. He actually was in Hot Tub Time Machine, and we had tried to get him in a Harold and Kumar movie. So we all knew him in the past. And he was a great guy. That was an easy meeting. That was a quick meeting at a Mexican restaurant over chips and salsa, telling him what we were doing. And it was just blowing his mind. And he's like, okay, well, do you have Ralph? We're like, well, we got to get Ralph. He's like, good luck. So we flew ourselves to New York, had a lunch with Ralph that was about 4 hours long, where we kept explaining over and over again, kind of like what our plan was. And, you know, the thing that was interesting was, you know, we were like, will he do this? Will he not do this? Because it was called Cobra Kai and he's not the entry point of the show. But I think part of that was what was interesting to him. He had been pitched the Karate Man over and over again. This was a different way in. And we were examining a world where you didn't have Mr. Miyagi in his story, you know, at least alive in his story. So that was a big part of it, was what's a Daniel LaRusso story look like in a world where he doesn't have his mentor there to guide him. So once those two were in, we were smooth sailing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what you got, Ralph, then the rest is history. And then you were able to get a ton of, like, that's what I loved about the show the most, is that you had struck a perfect balance of creating a newer show, which a different generation could get behind and have similar, you know, of what we felt watching The Karate Kid when we were younger. So where it takes it to a new level, but also touching all the right nostalgic feels with the connection back to the original music, original movie, all the music that you had, all the different actors and actresses came back as well. You freaking nailed it every which way. And I'm assuming that's a process that just evolves. Like, you come up with the idea, you get these two fine, and then how do you build it out from there that turns it into the phenomenon that it became?
It was really just following our instincts of what we wanted to see. And that's how we've worked our entire careers. You know, I think we had this instinct that there's also three of us and eventually a writer's room beyond that, where we're all talking at length of every decision we're making. You know, for us, it was, if you're bringing back an original character or doing a callback of some sort, it needs to be more than just, hey, remember this. It needs to be adding to the present day story. It needs to feel fresh. It needs to feel like each time we're doing something, it's a little bit different. And we were just diving deep with all of that stuff. So that was a huge part of the fun of the show for us. And equally important was creating a whole new generation of Karate Kids and having, for a younger audience, you know, people like my children's age who are able to watch the show, and they're connecting with the younger cast in the ways that we connected with Daniel way back when.
Now, for you, I'm assuming this has taken you personally into a new stratosphere as far as your level of fame with the success of this show.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been our biggest success. You know, we had made you know, the Harold and Kumar movies. We had made American Reunion, which is an American Pie reunion movie. We had done the movie Blockers. So we've done a number of things over the years, but this was a whole new level, this worldwide phenomenon of the show. And it's been a dream come true.
And how about the decision to, and we'll get to the Mets in just a second, but I'm fascinated by this, like how now people consume shows. So you made it for, you know, boom, here are the episodes, go nuts and watch them and stream them. And then you held on to that final episode. How about the process of writing a show that's going to be out there in one, you know, one sitting that people consume the shows, and then also holding off on that final season or the finale of the show?
Well, you know, it was always the stream model. That's what was going on when we were selling the show. So we always viewed it as just a supersized movie. You know, we came from the movie world, so we view this as a supersized movie with 10 chapters within each season, and each episode has to work as an episode, but it has to tell a larger story. For this final season, we did 15 episodes, and, you know, we ended up dropping 5, 5, and 5 over the course of, you know, a stretch of, you know, 9 months. And, you know, it was something that was different. It wasn't our preferred way to drop the show, but it was one of those things where enough time had passed between seasons. There was the strike. There were a number of things that were delaying things. So the goal was to get episodes out to fans as soon as possible. And we wrote them as three distinct parts. So having this, you know, final five come out the last week was just amazing, because that's what we've been building to this whole time. You know, if you watch the first season and then you watch those final five episodes, you see lots of callbacks. You see the spirit of that first season and sort of where we started bringing it back full circle.
Yeah, I loved it. Now, did you always have that ending? And I saw you in the making a cameo there in the end, which I thought was great. Did you guys always have that ending in mind with Cobra Kai prevailing and however you had it work out there?
Well, the Cobra Kai prevailing element and Johnny having this, big success and where Johnny and Daniel land, all of that stuff was something that we planned from the very beginning. You know, our own cameos, that was not something that we planned. That was something that was fun. People kept being like, you got to put yourself on the show. You got to put yourself in there. And, you know, we thought of a little fun Easter egg to throw us in there towards the end.
I love the way you did that. Now, to the Mets, and we're going to tie it in here. Another Easter egg that I noticed, Kevin Burkhardt made an appearance in the final season. And I'm assuming, I know Kevin, you know, Kev is a big Hollywood guy now, doing Super Bowls and stuff, but he rose to fame at SNY doing the Mets. So I'm assuming that there was a little tie in there with you being a diehard Met fan, building up a relationship with Kevin Burkhardt, getting him in there.
It's so funny. So I never spoke to Kevin Burkhardt was the night of the wrap party for our movie American Reunion. Somebody who worked on the movie knew Kevin as well. And, you know, she ends up grabs her phone, calls him, puts him on the phone with me. This was the same day that the Mets traded, was it Beltran? It was when we got,
Wheeler.
Yes, it was that night that happened. So the first time I ever spoke to Kevin Burkhardt was that exact day. And we're talking about that trade. Over the years, we become friends, and I've gotten to know him pretty well. And I knew he was a fan of the show. And that when we were doing, you know, this big worldwide tournament and was going to be, everyone's all eyes are on it. You know, I called up Kevin. I said, "Hey, man, would you like to pop on here?" Obviously, you know, I've been a giant fan of Kevin's since the SNY days. I watch SNY all the time. So it was a real treat to have him on there.
And Kevin, I don't know if you know this, but he used to work at The Fan. So I go back years with him. And it's funny because I knew I was going to have you. I wanted to have you for a while. And then I saw something pop up and I'm like, oh, well, it's the final season, Cobra Kai. Now's the time to do it ahead of spring training. Let's see if you're available. And then I was binging the final season, the final second and third parts of the final season. And I see Kev and I'm like, oh my God, that is great that he made an appearance on that. Also, Ralph, a big Met fan as well. So I'm sure you've had plenty. You and Ralph talk about your Mets quite a bit.
We talk Mets all the time. We've been to multiple Mets games together. Our families go to Mets games together at Citi Field. We talk about the Mets all the time.
So are you from where originally in New York? I'm assuming
I'm from New Jersey.
New Jersey. Okay, fine.
Yes. Yeah,
so now how'd you become a Met fan?
It's funny. I lived for 7 years in Pittsburgh, actually, from first through seventh grade at the peak of Mets in the 80s. And my father was a fan of New York teams. My father's actually both my parents are from the Bronx, actually, originally. And they were always Yankee fans. But during that one stretch of time, the Mets were really good. The Yankees were not good. And the World Series was happening. So that was my introduction to baseball. So I was watching the Mets back then. I remember being in Pittsburgh. I would wear a Doc Gooden jersey to Mets Pirates games there as everyone yelled at me. I was like an 11-year-old kid. And everyone was, screaming in my face about the Mets suck. But I've been a diehard Mets fan ever since 86.
That's so great. I love that. Three River Stadium. I mean, man, I remember watching those games as a young kid. I never went to that stadium, unfortunately. All right. So where are you at right now? The Mets get Soto. Take me through your thought process of how excited you were with Juan Soto.
Oh, this is the dream. I am beyond thrilled about the Mets right now. First of all, a big thing for me is I have a daughter who's 14 years old, and she's gotten into the Mets the same way that I have. She's as passionate about the team as I am. Her middle name is Shay, actually. So I kind of forced the issue early on. But, I'll just never forget that day. This whole offseason has been both amazing and maddening. Because, you know, you're just constantly checking your phone. Is Pete going to sign? Is Soto going to sign? Like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just remember the moment that the tweet dropped, I started screaming. I was like, "Elizabeth, get down here." And we all just like, we were just dancing around the house, just screaming and yelling so excitedly. It was a dream come true.
Gives me goosebumps even hearing that. Soto's the magnitude of this. Like he's got to go out there and perform. But to get a young superstar in his prime with where the Mets are at and taking him away from the Yankees, oh, my God, it's never happened before. Are you a Mets fan that hates the Yankees, John? Where are you at with them?
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not a Met fan who hates the Yankees. I'm a Mets fan who loves the Mets. My dad is still a Yankee fan, although he likes the Mets too, but he's still a Yankee fan. So I can't hate on it. I hate them the most when the Mets are horrible and they're great. But now that we're at a stage where, you know, I mean, the Mets and Yankees, when we play heads up, I mean, the Mets are clearly the better team. It's not even a question at this point. So, right now I kind of feel bad for the Yankees. It was shocking that they made it as far as they did last year. But, you know, the Mets were the class organization of New York.
I swept them last year head to head. As I told, we had Aaron Boone in studio a couple weeks back. Yeah. And I told him at the end of the interview, hey, good luck in the Subway Series. Maybe you guys will get a game this year. Yeah. All right. So how about Alonso coming back? I could follow along with your tweet, so I know you're excited. What are your thoughts on Pete Alonso?
I am so thrilled. I've felt that this was the logical thing this entire time. Like, I always like to take a step back during the off season. And I'm thinking of these moments. I think of these guys as humans. Like, I know I've been through my own kind of like business negotiations over the years, and I know how I feel in these different moments, and I know how I feel on the other side of them as well. You know, for Pete, it was very clear. Anyone who's been following the Mets all this time knows that Pete is, you know, genuine, wears his heart on his sleeve a lot of times. He loves the Mets. He bleeds orange and blue. And I felt this whole time he wanted to be back. I've also believed that the Mets wanted him back, you know, at their price and on their terms. But, you know, I think that it was an obvious thing for both sides. So it was infuriating all offseason, hearing all the nonsense, all the noise. And the moment when Steve Cohen came out there during that fan fest, I actually was like, I think we're getting him back, because I felt that was his moment in putting it out there, saying, listen, like, we want him back. You know, we're frustrated right now because we feel like we've made the best offer that's out there. Come on, let's just get this done already. And, you know, I would say, like, if I'm Pete, you know, and I'm hearing my bosses being like, you know, kind of frustrated a little bit at their wit's end at a time when, like, I know that this is where I want to end up. Like, eventually I feel like they were going to come together.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I felt like, and look, you're following it along and it is frustrating. And Met fans were, you know, you'd run into people and I'd be like, oh my God, Soto. And they're like, well, yeah, but what about Alonso? So it was such a huge talking point, even after signing Soto, that Met fans wanted their guy, Pete Alonso, back. But the Mets were ready to move on. And then Cohen comes out at Amazing Day and said that. And once he said that, I'm with you, John. I thought he was going to come back.
Say one thing real quick. I never believed they were ready to move on. Like, I thought when the Andy Martino story came out about, like, oh, the Mets have pivoted, like, I didn't buy the pivot, because the wording of the pivot thing was sort of like that they're assuming that, like, they're preparing for a world where they think he's going to go somewhere else. It was the same kind of language of, like, when they thought earlier in the day of the Juan Soto day, they thought he was going to go somewhere else. That didn't mean that was the reality of the situation. They were putting out there, we think that this is what's happening. But I believed in my heart at that time that Pete wanted to come back and that this was all negotiations. So, like,
could have been. But I do trust the reporting with Andy, and obviously I know Andy well, so sure. I'm familiar with that story. And you're right. It wasn't definitive. The Mets are moving on. Screw Pete. But it was the way that I took it was they made their best offer. They believe, because he keeps turning it down, he's going to sign elsewhere. And then ultimately, for the good for both, for Pete, as he gets paid the $30 million, which is the highest first baseman in baseball this year. So good for him and good for the Mets that they get their guy back at a good value. Last year, how exciting was it for you to follow a magical season all the way through, whether it's the OMG stuff, first year with Mendy, Lindor MVP, Grimace. What are your thoughts on the 2024 season?
It was my favorite season that I've experienced. I remember 99 was a great year. I lived in New York that summer. I went to so many games. That was a fun, magical season. And they were similar in the sense that, like, they weren't supposed to be as good as they were. They started off not great and were kind of down and out. And I mean, last season, I just remember there being the moment where it's funny. I remember talking to Kevin Burkhart like right before the turnaround and saying to him, like, you know, what's going on here? Like, and we both were just like, this is not going to get better anytime soon. This, we're in the long haul of it being just bad as a Mets fan. This was when Lindor was not playing well early in the season. And just, I was actually at the game. I went with Ralph to the game with our families, the JD Martinez walk-off home run game. We were there in person. And that was sort of the Grimace was the day before that. And I just remember the whole ride ever since then was just magical and fun. And just, it kept building on itself in all the best possible ways.
Do you like the higher expectations? Because part of the charm for last year, or 99, which was one of my favorite seasons, so I'm with you right there, I'm 45, 99 was like my peak going to games. I like that team better than 2000. Yep. Do you like the higher expectations going into like this season, or would you rather have the lowered expectations like last year?
I like the high expectations because I want our team to like not – I want our team to be stacked. I want our team to like look really good. And I think they showed a lot last year that made me feel good. Like I'm entering this season feeling like, obviously we got Soto, we have Pete back. You know, I want to see Alvarez take that step forward. He has all the potential in the world. I want to see Vientos continue the magic of what was there. Lindor just needs to be Lindor. Maybe we get McNeil back, you know, to play like he did second half. We'll see. JD Winker, like, I love that energy. I'm curious about Siri just because, you know, he seems like a spark plug, you know, kind of personality in the Winker mold, but a different kind. You know, like, there's a lot to be excited about for this team. So I like entering with high expectations, but, you know, it's going to be stressful.
Yeah, last year was great. Now it's real. What about the dynamics, you being in L.A.? You live the majority of your time in L.A.?
I live in Los Angeles. This is where I live. You know, when I'm not filming outside of Los Angeles, this is where I live full time. So,
okay, so how was it with the Mets versus the Dodgers last year? Did you get to go to those games? There's smack talk out there. What's that like?
I went to the games. There's plenty of smack talk, especially for my daughter. It's so funny because, like, she's you know, a Mets fan growing up in L.A. in a school where the Dodgers are the best that they've been in forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, but she likes to mix it up with the other kids, you know, but she's having kind of that experience that I had growing up with the Mets as underdogs and being a little bit of an outsider and still like sticking to your guns and being passionate about the team. So yeah, there's a lot of smack talk out here. We went to all the games. Anytime the Mets are in LA, I try to hit every game I can. Certainly the playoffs, I hit every game, and it's the best.
And how's it challenging with your schedule, which I'm sure when you're on a project, it's got to be tough to watch and follow all the games. How does that work for you throughout the course of a season?
Over the course of the year, if I'm not on set, then I'm finding a way whether I record a game and I keep it for when I come home from work and I just avoid everything so that I could watch the game like that. Sometimes it's like if it's a certain kind of work, I have it on in the background, you know, at work. But I follow the Mets more than anything in my life outside of it's my family, it's my work, and it's the Mets. Like, literally, that's everything.
I freaking love that. I could feel that it's real. Like, there are certain celebrities, Hollywood guys that are like, yeah, I'm a Mets fan, but I could see through it. You are legit. You're going to spring training. When are you going to spring training this weekend?
I'm flying. My daughter and I are going on Thursday. So we're going to, you know, hit up the practices on Friday and the first two games of the year. We're going to hopefully see Juan Soto's first at bats in a Mets uniform.
Now, do you get, like, the special treatment? It's okay to admit it. Like, are you getting, you know, Steve Cohen, they watch the show. Where are you at as far as your celebrity hooking you up with the Mets or the players themselves being fans of the show?
Well, it's my first time, like, going to spring training, so I've never had that experience before. I do know, you know, Ralph and Billy threw out a first pitch for the Mets, so I was on the field for that. My Cal Penn, who plays Kumar, threw out a first pitch. So I was on the field for that. I threw out a virtual first pitch during the pandemic. So I still haven't done one on the actual mound. So I do have some relationships there with the Mets. So I did reach out. I will have some special access. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what it's going to be. It's my first spring training ever, but I cannot wait.
That is freaking awesome. Your daughter's going to have a great time. It is great. I've only been, I've been a couple times, but it is a great experience, much more intimate, you know, there, because there's not that many people there, an intimate setting, and you're starting to get set for the year. In season, how often do you come back and go to games? Is it just business related when you're in New York and then you'll try to go to games if they're in town?
You know, it's usually if I'm in New York, now that, you know, I want to try to figure out a way to go to more games. It all depends on my work situation. My most fun thing last year was my daughter and I went to the Phillies Mets. We went to Philadelphia and went to those Mets Phillies playoff games because my brother-in-law, who's also a huge Mets fan, lives in Philly. So he and his family, you know, deal with the stresses of living in Philly, but being huge Mets fans. So we went, we traveled back. We were at those Mets Phillies games in Philadelphia, and that was electric and insane.
Did you do any of the home playoff games last year with the Phillies?
I wasn't able to do that. No, because it was the weekends. My daughter was in school. So, but the thing that I will say that was really crazy was I'll never forget the Pete home run night. So yeah, that game obviously was so frustrating all the way through the game. And my daughter and I, we had to be at a dinner at this restaurant that night. So we had the phone, I like to watch the game in the real way. And we had it on the phone. We're gathered around the table watching that game. And it goes down to, it's the final three outs. And I said to her, okay, this is the end of our season. Let's go over to the bar area. And she and I sat at the bar where they had the TV for real. And we're sitting there and we're holding hands the whole inning, and as it unfolds and as Pete hit, and I remember saying, this may be Pete's last at bat as a New York Met, but he has a chance to do something to change all of that right now. And I'll just never forget him hitting the home run, and we just got so excited, and just tears just rolled down her face. And it was that's a moment I'll never forget. And I'll say I had already purchased my Phillies Mets tickets. So it was all riding on that. It was either we're flying to first thing tomorrow morning, we're flying to Philadelphia, or that all goes away and the season's over. So Pete hits that home run. We win that game. And then I was on a flight to Philadelphia the next day.
That is an incredible. I have goosebumps hearing that story and remembering that moment. So what an emotional freaking moment the whole year. You couldn't even write something like that, John. No. I don't care what kind of creator you are. The whole year, every at bat, is this going to be his last? The pressure with Pete. Down to that, he screws up the fly ball. Before that, the pop foul that he drops, comes up with the season on the line. It was either do or die, and he hits that freaking home run. Unbelievable. I mean, that is just unbelievable. Yeah. You can't write that.
You can't write that. No, 100%. That's the dream Hollywood ending. It was impossible to have written that.
What's the next project here moving forward, the big one? By the way, I do like Harold and Kumar. I've been into that. American Reunion. I didn't even know that you were on that, but I was looking you up before, so I did see that. Obviously, Cobra Kai was a great hit. Even the other one?
Obliterated.
Yes, I like that show, Obliterated. Is that coming back?
Oh, that's not coming back. That was the best. That show, it came out right after the strike, the writer's strike. It didn't have the promotion that it needed, but it had a lot of eyeballs. And every time I talked to people who saw it, people loved it. I loved making that show. As of now, no plans for it to come back, but who knows, maybe down the road. But as of what's next, we have a bunch of things that we're kind of cooking up. I have nothing that I could announce just yet. We're toying with some things in the Karate Kid Cobra Kai universe. We're toying with things that are outside of that universe. We've got TV, we've got movies. There's a movie that we're producing this summer that has not been announced yet, so I can't say it, but my hope is that very soon that gets announced. Something that Hayden and I had written the script for many years ago, and it's we're producing it this summer.
Last one for you, John, and we do appreciate the time, and it's been fun talking some Mets with you. Do you think there's, without getting into specifics if you're involved in it, but do you think that there's more to tap into the way that you guys did with the nostalgia for Karate Kid, maybe more along those lines of other 80s hits or maybe early 90s, stuff like that?
100%. I mean, that's something that we think about a lot. You know, I think it all comes from the approach that you have to that work. You know, with Cobra Kai, that was coming from a place of love. It wasn't like a cynical sort of studio being like, okay, what do we have? How do we make money off of this? This was literally just passion from fans, you know, trying to put out there what we'd want to see. And we have ideas for other things in 80s properties. And, you know, we'll see if that's, you know, part of the future as well.
Awesome, John. Hey, next time you're in New York, if you ever want to come by either the SNY studios or come hang out on Fan, we'll put you on the Fan this time for real. You come in and hang out, get in studio. We'll talk some Mets, chop it up whenever you may be in town. This was a pleasure talking to you. We appreciate the time. Good luck with all your projects and good luck, of course, to your Mets.
Awesome. Let's go Mets.